starting this morning, what we're going to be learning about is the mitzvah of Shnai Mikra. And I'd like to divide it into 2 weeks, so such that we can understand the underpinnings. First of all, I'd like to go through the details, and coming back next week at the end to understand the reasonings, and then slot the details back into place. Okay, so therefore we have all the cards on the table by the time we come to the underpinnings as well. That's the general plan over here. So I just want to recount a story. I was once in yeshiva myself, and the way I used to do things in those days when I was fortunate enough to have time was on Friday mornings, instead of everything else, I'd clear out my schedule, and I'd sit down, begin the parasha right then, and learn Shnai Mikra. I'd learn the parasha, I'd learn Rashi, I'd learn Unculus, Friday mornings, from top to bottom, depending on how long the parasha was, and that would be the way things were going. One day, a very, I'd assume, well-meaning gentleman came over to me, and says to me, you know, why aren't you learning? And I said, well, you know, the last time I checked, this did work as learning. He said, Shnai Mikra is not, you know, this is Seder. This is the you're in Yeshiva now. This is not about, you know, Chumash. You got to be learning Gemara. And you know, after Shabbos lunch, then that's the time maybe you can put in the Shnai Mikra. And I said, you mean the time when everybody is learning with their noses touching the page? So it concerned me a little bit, just the perspective that people have on this. On this mitzvah, because it happens to be that although Gemara is very important, and it's talked about by many people how important Gemara is, in the end of the day, Shulchan Aruch clearly sets aside one specific siman just telling us about this. That's what we're going to be investigating over here. Shulchan Aruch thinks it's very important, and interestingly enough, just to note, the siman that it's in is siman, in Aruch Chaim, Reish Pei Hei, which is siman rapa, which literally means weak. It's one of the, if you go across the board, any of the most weakest simonim, the weakest thing which people have to do is Shnai Mikra. So therefore, it's a good thing just to realize the significance of it, and just the details. There's a lot of interesting details that come into this. I'd like to quote for you in response to the story, just what Rav Moshe Feinstein said. He was presented, I took out the names of the people who asked him this question, but he presented in on the first page, he was presented with the following question. He says, "Hine b'inyan ha-mitzvah," this is the second line, "V'hine b'inyan ha-mitzvah shemechuyav kol echad ve'echad likra ha-parsha b'chol shavua." Concerning the mitzvah that every individual is expected to read the parsha on a weekly basis, shnayim mikra ve'echad targum, twice with the text and once with a translation, raboseinu afar me'arishonim, hosifu shesorech lilmol gam pirush rashi shal kol parsha, and we're going to see that it's not necessarily just the translation, but maybe Rashi. We're going to get to the details in a moment. He says that a lot of people, even people who will say spending their time learning, are not learning this. You know, so it's lost on both sides. People don't have a chance to learn or not learning it, and people do have a chance to learn or not learning it. So Rav Moshe's response is, just like any person, you don't have a dispensation. You don't have an exception to any rabbinic commandments, but because you're learning Torah. Right, you wouldn't say, let's say that, you know, I don't light Neros Chanukah because I'm busy learning. That doesn't work that way, right? The point there's learning, that's one mitzvah, and there's other mitzvahs which are time bound, and you do those in their respective time frame. Kein lo nifterum afi mitzvahzu, a person is not exempt from such a mitzvah. Va'adraba, av misha tarasu monasa karebi shimon bar yochai v'chaverov shoyu peturim mitzvilin. We know that there were certain individuals in the Talmud, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and his friends, who would even not daven because they continued learning. Even such people, they would still read the parasha twice and translate it. So Rav Moshe emphasizes just the significance of this, because there's a sort of attitude which is prevalent across the board that when you're learning Torah, this is not the real deal. One has to, you know, be learning Gemara, and there's a reason why people focus on that. The way the Rambam says it is, why is Gemara so significant? Why does the Rambam focus on the fact that one should be learning Gemara so much? Because it contains the tripart division, which is, it contains Psukim, it contains Mishnah, and it contains the Talmud, which is the attempt to understand the Mishnah. So the Rambam suggests one should learn Gemara, and it encompasses everything. Which is why there's become a larger focus on that. But in the end of the day, this mitzvah over here is independent. It works on its own on its own timer. So let's just for a moment read the very short Gemara. This is the only Gemara which describes Mishnah Mikra Vecher Targum. And what we have to do over here is to try to pry it open, try to understand all the details that we have today from this very short text. I'd like to do that with your help. So the Gemara says the following. This is on the first page in the Gemara in Brachos Daf Ches Amar Aleph. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Ami. So we're quoted in the name of Rabbi Ami. That what? Le'olam yashlim adam parshiyasov im hatzibur, shnaim mikra ve'echad targum. A person should always complete his parshiyos, his sections with the community. Va'avilu ataros v'divan. Even ataros v'divan. What is that? What's ataros v'divan?
They're names of
locations in Parshas Matos, okay? Even the names of cities in Parshas Matos, fascinating, okay? Shekol ha-mashlim parshiyosav im ha-tzibur, the Gemara doesn't just say, you should, it says why you should, because a person who does such, ma'arichin lo yomov u'shnosov, will have extended years and days. Interesting. I'd like to investigate that in a moment, why that should be the response. Let's take it a little further. I would like to get the overall picture and then come back to the details. Rabbi Bibi Bar Abaye sover l'ashlomin l'parshasayich de kula shasa b'mali d'yom kippuri. So the way that Rav Bibi Bar Abaye would do it was he would do the entire Torah, complete the entire Torah, it sounds like, on Erev Yom Kippur. Can you imagine? If it's not busy enough, on Erev Yom Kippur, he'd sit down and finish up everything. Tanale.
Excellent.
Is Rav Bibi finishing up? Is he completing something or is he doing it all? Good question. Good. Excellent.
Also, they didn't have a
one-year
cycle.
Great.
That counters the question.
So there's two points well sustained. It sounds like he is finishing. So maybe that he's doing it up till now, number one. And number two is that we're going to come back to us in a second. Is about the 3-year cycle and the 1-year cycle. It seems at this point in time we are dealing with the 1-year cycle, and there's a few examples of how that expresses itself. So the problem with doing it on such a day, Tanale Chia Bar Rav Midifti Ksiv Va'inisemes Nashar Sechem B'Tisha LaChodesh Bo'erev. You should afflict yourself on the 9th of the month in the evening. V'Chi B'Tisha Misanim. Do we fast on the 9th? V'Ala Basar Misanim. Wait a second, we fast on the 10th, that's Yom Kippur, right? The 2-day fast would be very difficult. Rather, a person who is eating on the 9th and fasting on the 10th is as if you fasted 2 days. So what's the problem?
He's supposed to be eating instead of learning.
Great. So in other words, he's supposed to be eating in this case as a mitzvah, midah or raisa, to be eating. And... it depends how much. It depends how much he had to catch up. Right? So it depends how much he had to catch up. But some of the Gemara seems to think that this is not Esher L'Kayim Shneim. Apparently, there would be so much of the learning or so much of the eating that one or two of the two couldn't go together, which is interesting. Now, I wonder if this has to do with that in terms of expressing and articulating it. Meaning, you're able to learn and think about things, but Shnayim Mikra might have an extra aspect of articulation. If it doesn't have an aspect of articulation, it's very hard with the donut in your mouth, right? So that might be part of the issue. So now, option two, that didn't seem to work. Sovalak Duminhu, he thought to bring them earlier, which understood by Rashi means to say that he'd do it the week before and he'd front load his Shnayim Mikra, right? Omar Le, Hahu Sabo, an elderly man said to him, Tanino Bilvajul Yakdim Shalayachir, a person should not put it too late or put it too early. Rather, it should be on that week. Kedah Omar Lehu, Rabbi Yishim, Rabbi Yishim ben Levi, Livne, Ashlimu Pushasoy, Le Parshu Saichu, Imatzibur Shnai Mikrova Echotargum. You should finish it with the community. With the community meaning? What's the community? Great, excellent. So the community sets the pace, which means when they're laning, that should be the time frame. Now we're going to have to hone in on that. We're going to have to see when that starts and begins in a moment. A few points to glean from this Gemara. Number one, a person has to finish his parashios with the tzibur. What's the outcome? Marich in line? Yom avushnasa. A person gets long life. Why? Why is that a requisite response?
Isn't it also odd that the Gemara says that? Because
okay.
It doesn't say, light Hanukkah, no candles, you know, one life. I mean, if it's a mitzvah, they're albanim, which the Gemara doesn't say, by the way, where this comes from.
Right, we don't have the source of this. Right, we don't have the source of this.
Doesn't say if it's a chiyuv, because usually you don't say, do a mitzvah that the albanim enacted before you're going to get one life.
It is unusual. Yeah. So some people humorously say that because it takes a long time, you need a lot of time for that. I don't think that's necessarily what's going on. It is a time-consuming commitment. What I heard Daniel Feldman mentioned, that there is a Gemara which says that if a person's offered an aliyah and doesn't accept it, that's it's something which is not good and it would diminish a person's lifespan. Now, in those days, when a person gets an aliyah, who would lane? Every person would lane, right? It wasn't like it worked today, where you have one person who spends the time preparing. Every person would get up there and lane. So, it's very hard to accept an aliyah if you don't know it. So, one aspect of this might be, without getting to all the reasonings, is maybe this Shnai Mikra. I mean, can you imagine, Baruch, can you imagine preparing laning just two times? It would be amazing, right? But apparently this is supposed to be that some sort of preparation that if a person were to be called up with the tzibur, he'd be able to do that. He'd be able to make the commitment and therefore marichin lashna yom avoshna so that he'd be able to accept aliyahs. Yes?
The Shulchan Aruch also break down that in order for a Balaam to read, he has to prepare at least two times.
I'm not familiar. If you could show this to me, I'd be very interested. But that might be exactly that at this point.
Well, how does that explain the Targum? It explains the
Now it happens to be when they laned in shul, when they laned those days in shul, what would happen? They would have
a
matar game. They would have somebody who would translate into Aramaic for the crowds to understand. So that might be part of that. Exactly this point is that you're not only proficient with the laning, but you're also proficient with being able to translate it sufficiently in the way that it works. We're going to discuss Unculus in a second. So that might be one aspect of it. However, there was a fascinating Margolios HaShas, which is a later Pirush on the Shas, which if I could draw your attention to page 2, Rav Rosner pointed this out, and I think it's a very fascinating point in general. At the very top of page 2, it says the following, Kavonas Chazal, Hamashlim Parshiyosov Im HaTzibor, a person who completes his Parshiyos with the Tzibor, Marichin Lo Yom HaVushinosov. Hayotzorich Lichtov, Parshiyos, it should have written, Parshiyos, without a pronoun. Sections. Not his sections. Maze shediko parshiyos. What does it mean, his sections? What's it got to do with him? Does each person have their own section? V'gam maze haschar midah b'midah ma'arichin. Why is it a requisite response that he gets long years? Ela ha'inyan. Rather the matter is, kol adam yesh lo parsha miyuchedes b'hiluch chayov v'olamoy. Sheyesh lo lahashlim Every person has a parsha. Every person has a mission. Every person has something that they should be doing here down on earth. A person may think that they are so busy. Well, first of all, halavai, let's take a step back. Because halavai, a person realizes what that is. But let's say a person realizes that they're on earth for a particular mission. And it could be a number of very varied different things. They have certain endowments. They have certain gifts. They have interacted with people in a certain way that they know that that's their tafkid to be doing over here in this world. So often what would happen is you'd think, well, getting involved with other people, helping out other people, interferes with my mission. I'm on a mission. We know people in the office like this, right? People who've got they've got a laser beam focus, and anything which is on the side of that is ignored. Va'al kein amru chazal. Therefore, chazal say, ha'mashlim im ha'tzibur. A person needs to complete his parsha, his mission in life, with the tzibur, incorporating not just yourself, but the people around you. Shedoeg gam l'zoros l'ashpia al acherim. That he is concerned with those around him. In such a case, lo yasid klum milimudai v'avodasai. A person will not lose out from his personal mission or learning. Ki schoro marichin lo yomo v'shnoisov. That person will have long years. Kinyan ma'asei d'Rabbi Preda, shechaz v'talmud dalad me'os pomim, v'chai dalad me'os shona. That there's, whether hyperbole or not, that Rabbi Preda apparently was asked by a student 400 times for the same lesson. He acquiesced, he taught him 400 times. Can you imagine? I mean, can you imagine the teacher and can you imagine the student? And he had a long life. Okay, so interestingly enough, the point is that don't think that helping others interferes with your personal goal. That's part and package of the deal. Im hatzibur. Fascinating point of Machshava. Now, coming back to a very, very strange question. Why does the Gemara need to tell us that you need to finish Shnai Mikra with Ataras V'Divon, which, as a number of people pointed out, is a particular pasuk in the middle of Matos? I mean, you should do Shnai Mikra even Bereshis. You should do Shnai Mikra even Shmos. Why does the Torah single out a particular pasuk seemingly in the middle of nowhere? Got nothing to do with anything. It would seem very strange.
This is the pasuk you're most likely to skip.
Why so?
It says absolutely nothing that's useful to you today.
Okay, fantastic. So I'd like to be careful in the wording of that, but I would like to be careful with the wording of that. But there is
what was that? There's no translation.
Okay. So the first thing is to point out, as Rashi says, and as Joel's saying, as Stephen's saying, Vafilo Atoras Divon She'ein Lo Targum. There is no translation to it, and therefore what?
You can't just translate it. Targum.
So what should you do? So what? It has no targum. So what should you do? Shnai Mikra, okay.
And that's it. And
okay. Okay. So one way of looking at this is that a verse which has no translation in Aramaic, one should say just the Mikra. Other people understand that means to say that in place of the targum, you say a third time the pasuk. But be it as it may, the point.
So you don't have to say it at all because you can't.
Oh, wait. That's
the targum.
That's No. That wouldn't be a tenable option. Why? Because the Gemara is saying that one should do Shnai Mikra even in Ataras Adivon, meaning even a place which has no targum.
I didn't tell you even Ataras.
Yeah, you would have maybe left it out.
You might argue exactly. You can skip that pasuk.
Exactly, because it has no translation. Exactly.
If that pasuk is just it's not the only place.
Great! Give me a better example. Somebody's name.
This week's Tasha, right.
Somebody's name. Why do you need to go to find a name of a city which, you know, if you'd been asked, you know, we would have no idea. Why do we need a name of a city? Tell me somebody's name. Ela Shmos B'nei Yisrael Yatsim Yisrael. Reuven Shimon. That's good. They don't have translations. Yes, there was a thought over there.
It sounds like, from just people's responses, that the whole point of doing the Shnai Mikra is for the targum itself.
That's what it would sound like. As understood through this Rashi, it may be. That's what it sounds like. That what I'd like to do is just in the division is next week we're going to start off with the significance of the targum itself and how that plays out. That's where we're going to come back to the point that you're raising is that it sounds like it's targum oriented, right? Which is why this has to be emphasized, okay? Because it might be understanding oriented. That might be part of it, okay? So that we are going to come back to in a second. But interesting, Rashi has to point out a pasuk which has no translation. Problem being, number one is, choose something simpler. Why do I choose that? Number two is open up a chumash.
It actually has translation.
It has a translation. Okay, now it happens to be that there is a Targum Unkelus on this which does translate it differently to the actual words. Unkelus does not just repeat this. Fascinating, right?
He calls it by the contemporary name of the town at the time. I mean,
not sure about that.
Well, whatever, he changed. Like, for example, Unkelus does this in many places. For example, he translates Kadesh like the Gemara is Rekin.
Yes, okay.
He'll try
absolutely
to identify it
with the contemporary Aramaic translations. Yes. Okay, so there is relevance to that. It just seems to be that Rashi doesn't have that. Tosis accentuates Mr. Kasowitz's question over here, which is, over here in the Tosis in the second last source on page 2. V'afil ataras adivon pirush Rashi, afil ataras adivon she'en boi targum, she'tzorich likroisoi. Shloish apamin betzibur. The way he understands it is that a person should read it three times. Okay, because there's an absence of translation. In place of that translation, you should mention it a third time. Number one says Tosos that if you look in the Targum Yerushalmi, if you pull out the Mikros Gedolos, you'll notice there's not only on the left side Unkelus, but on the far side, sometimes you have Targum Yonasan Min Ozil, sometimes you have a Targum Yerushalmi, depending what version you have. But it has a different translation. Choose names. Choose something which is very clearly unarguably without translation. And therefore, Tosfos says more of a subtle point. Why are these cities chosen? Even though in the version that Tosfos and Rashi have, there's no specific Aramaic translation into Unkelus, but there is another one that if you were to search into the records, there is one. That you would think that you should read it three times in Hebrew. One should search out those far-flung targumim and say it that way. So Tosfos is more of a, we'll call it a very local chiddush. Reuven and Shimon, what would you do? Reuven, Shimon, Reuven, Shimon, Reuven, Shimon. Say it three times. Ataras Adivon, Ataras Adivon, Ataras Adivon. Go find the further out translation. That's the way Tosfos views it. There happens to be an interesting distinction in halacha between the two, between Rashi and Tosfos, in a second. However, the two other fascinating pirushim, which I'd like to call attention to. Number one is Rabbeinu Bachaya on the Torah. Rabbeinu Bachaya says something which we wouldn't have necessarily known unless he pointed this out to us, and that is in the bottom of the page. Why? Why does the Talmud point out this specific pasuk? Because these cities happen to be named after deities. Isn't that interesting? I mean, Ataras Adivon aren't just New York and Boston. Ataras Adivon are cities named after the god of that area. And therefore, Shelo Tomar, you shouldn't say Kevin Shatargum who pirush hakosov enon al targum apostle gazer ki yesh bo zichron avodah zarah. Therefore, you may think, well, let's not go into the translation. Let's not try to elaborate on something which is effectively understanding avodah zarah, right? We don't want to be spending too much time discussing that. While Kain bo chachamim lomar she'af b'apostle gazer roilas kiroi shloi lahakel boy. The Gemara goes to find a pasuk which you would think we wouldn't want to be spending so much time on, which is a very interesting background, something we wouldn't have necessarily picked up on just because of the background of what these places actually represent. And now perhaps the fourth but most colorful of all these. Yes, Dov.
Doesn't the Rambam, though, in the Maran Nebuchim, refer to a sefer called the Book of the Sabbatean Agriculture? Which they were dualists or somewhat like Zoroastrians, and so was Rambam interested in understanding Avodah Zarah so that we could not do that and guard ourselves against such things like the not to mix milk and meat, lo tibshal gidi b'chalav imo. There's a note that the Canaanites did this.
Yes.
Idolatrous.
Right. You're right. The Rambam spends a lot of time actually in Moreh Nevuchim, specifically identifying a number of mitzvahs which parallel or will call, say preclude certain practices in Avodah Zarah. So for instance, the Rambam says that korbanos are to counteract, for instance, the sacrifices brought by other nations and so on. It is worthwhile noting that the Rambam doesn't only stick with that in the Yad, in his halachic work, he says different reasons. He says that korbanos are beyond our comprehension. So it's a more of a complex picture in the Rambam as a whole. But I think that there certainly is value from the way, at least the way the Rambam understood it. But the question is, again, what your intent is and what for a mitzvah over here, which is going to be a publicly disseminated mitzvah, right? This is something we expect in the community to be spending time on. Maybe it's not something that everybody needs to be doing, is spending time giving more words to another culture. This is not to enhance or to enable or to enrich our understanding. This is simply talking more about something which is a culture contrary to ours. So I think there may be a distinction in that. What was that?
Is there a targum on Baal
Tzfon? Good question. Because that would be an example of the same thing in Kondor Menucha. Yes.
I was going to say I would expect just the opposite. You would want to know more about Avodah Zarah. The more you know, the more protected you are. Rather than say this is a mystery that we're not allowed to delve into, say this is Avodah Zarah and you should know it.
Great. So maybe another. What we'll do is we'll take a topic about whether one protects by installation or exposure. So, that's not a topic on one foot. But yes, that's a topic in general about education. What I'd like to do is just to come back to. I don't believe I know your name yet.
Ira Geffen.
So Ira had a point which is a bit of a very it's a colorful point if you think about it, that the Torah Tumim actually brings up as the last point. This is quite a surprising statement to actually see. I'm not going to read the entire thing, but I'm going to start with the underline in the center of the Torah Tumim. Now, just to remember, the Torah Tumim is the nephew of the Netziv, right? That's why he wrote the book called Michael the Netziv, right? It is actually in Hebrew, Mekor Baruch. He writes, it's a four-volume sefer about his uncle the Netziv, and it's very, very fascinating. It's translated into English. It got a little bit of a bad review just because, you know, he describes the Netziv, you know, as very, very human, in very human terms. He's a very interesting person. What he does over here is a very fascinating description over here. The Torah Tumim's general role is, the reason why he calls his sefer a Torah Tumim, which means the pure Torah, the full Torah, is he takes the Torah Shebichsav, and on the bottom of it he quotes all the Gemaras and Midrashim relating to those Psukim, thereby putting on one page the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebalpeh. And therefore he calls that the Torah Tumima, the pure or all-encompassing Torah, because you see it in one place. And I mentioned a few weeks ago that if you ever want to see a letter of approbation of such nachas, you should see the letter of approbation at the beginning from his father, who writes an introduction to his sefer, which is an incredible amount of nachas as a father writing an introduction to the sefer. Very beautiful. So on the bottom, he footnotes all these gemaras, trying to explain them. And he has one of his footnotes. So he says, I'm starting from the underline in the center, which is Vani Tama, and I'm concerned, well, I don't understand. Mimilel Rabosenu da Kavonos HaGemara Koyal Echo Targum. He brings Rashi Tosas. Who says, he asks the Torah Tumima, that it's referring to the Targum. That's what that the gemara's focus is, that in the place of something which doesn't have a targum, this is what one should do. The reason why this pasuk is singled out is because of the very pasuk itself. This is not a pasuk which is, and I translate carefully, attached or necessary for continuation before or after. Let's say this pasuk was omitted. Let's say you did not say this pasuk, it would not detract from the intention of the Torah, or the continuation of this specific section. And therefore one could go from Pasuk Beis to Dalet without even noticing, because all it is describing is cities, and therefore if these cities were omitted, there would be no difference. Now, by the way, you have to be very careful with this kind of statement, because if taken out of context, if said in the wrong way, what effectively he's saying is that there's an unnecessary Pasuk in the Torah. Now that's something which you get closed out of the Jewish community for, right? We understand that every letter of the Torah is significant and God-given. So what the Torah Tumim is saying over here is a little more subtle than the way it could be tweeted in public, and that is the following: is that the Torah Tumim is making a very simple point. Let's say the Torah says, let's take the first pasuk in Parshas Shmos. Ve'ele Shmos b'nei Yisrael, habayim Yisrael ishu beisabo, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Right, the first two pasukim. So it talks about these are the names of b'nei Yisrael come to Yisrael. That all is translatable. And the next pasuk is the names of these people, which doesn't have a translation. Let's say we were to not say that we were to leave out those psukim. There'd be a problem. You've just introduced those psukim by saying these are the names. Then, doing in your Shnai Mikra, you omit three psukim, including the names, and you carry on. Wait a second. Where were the names? The pasuk beforehand is the Eilish Mois is now the prerequisite. It's the preface to the psukim of the names, even though they bear no translation. Says the Torah Tumima, in the case of Ateras Adivon, there's no need, beforehand or afterwards, to realize if you'd skipped it, that it was skipped. Not that it's a non-necessary pasuk, but the point is that the context doesn't force you to translate it. Whereas everywhere else, the context will force you to translate. Very subtle point that the Torah Tumim is making. And therefore the Gemara goes out to find this very unusual pasuk over here that requires translation. Fascinating point that the Torah Tumim brings out, just to hone in on the Iris point over here. Very fascinating putting together. Yeah, Dov?
Is it possible those names of places in the Matos spell out the name of Hashem as an encryption or encoded in the...
So what Dov, you're mentioning is the Ramban says in his introduction to the Torah, that the entire Torah is, now but just to take this a step back, we know that the Torah is predates the world, right? The Torah predates the world. He's stakel bo'araisu bo'ra'almas. So what does that mean? Hashem had a Torah scroll, and he was looking into that Torah scroll when he was creating the world? That's not what it means. What the Ramban understands that means is that the concept of Torah, which was expressed as white fire in the background and black fire superimposed upon it, in the form of the names of God consecutively, the names of God expressed consecutively existed in concept before the world, and when expressed in this form and finite fashion, was divided up in a specific manner to create the words that we have in black ink on white ink, to represent that primordial existence. Fascinating way the Ramban describes it. And therefore, every letter is of the utmost significance, of course. What the reason why it needs to be emphasized in the Gemara, like the Torah Tumim is saying, is because you may have not noticed if you skipped it, and therefore the Torah has to emphasize that. But absolutely, there's a significance in that respect to every letter. Okay? So now, moving straight on over here, with this is just a appreciate. One short phrase in the Gemara leads to very different understandings of the significance of this. Is there a difference in halacha? Perhaps. In the Psak, in the Taz, the Turei Zahav, who's the one of the earlier Pirushim on the Shulchan Aruch, says the following. Afilo Taras Adivon, what is this? These cities? Loshon Atur, Pirush Rashi, the Tur, quotes Rashi, Aval Bi She'ein Boi Targum, even though it has no translation, Lufize, Afilo Ruven V'Shimon V'Kayetzibose, even names which have no translation, Sorich Likros L'Gimel Palmim, you would need to read three times. V'Yesh Mefarshim, but some others described, Nokat Ataras Adivon Lufi She'yesh Svarim She'kosibohem Targum Yerushalmi, that Tosus understands that they have a far-flying translation in Yerushalmi, which is hard to get hold of. V'Nokat Ataras Adivon, Aval Bi She'ein Sorich Targum Kol Kach. And it took these cities because they don't require translation. According to Tosos, if you had to have Reuven and Shimon, where there's no translation anywhere, it's Reuven and Shimon across the board, you wouldn't need to do it three times, according to Tosos. That is an interesting distinction. In the minhag is, says the Taz, to say it three times like Rashi, which means that every name in the Torah we just do three times, simply stated.
Well, Tosa's final psak in the last words is sort of the rest of the if we come up and get a total across the time, so you just.
So that's I was confused about this. That the Tosa does seem to indicate you require three times. This Taz is the only source that I see mentioned on this, but it does come out interestingly enough because you're right, Tosa does mention three times. So just to recap for a second, Ataras Divon, four possible ways of split, either because it has no translation, because it has a further out translation, or because it's the name of Avodah Zarah, or because it is a context-free pasuk which may have been missed if translation was missed. Those are the four understandings we have over here. Now let's delve straight into halacha. Let's try to isolate the time frame. What would be the time frame for Shnai Mikra Echad Targum? From what we have over here, all we have is Gemara. What would be the translation?
To do it during.
Stephen, why do you say the week?
Because the
parsha is really good. Okay. So remember the Gemara had said, Lo yaktim v'lo ya'acher. A person shouldn't bring it earlier or later than? So
the Gemara is, by the way, bizarre because it says not to make it earlier or later, but it doesn't define the time.
Great. That's the problem. You see, the Gemara, all we have, the information of the Gemara itself is a little bit ambiguous. Right? It's not very clear. You shouldn't put it earlier or later than, and the time frames aren't defined. So the only defining time frame we have is Im Hatzibur, with the community, which somebody mentioned beforehand, would seem to indicate when the Tzibur is reading it. But you see, it's not apparently clear what that time frame is. When does it start? When does it end? Okay? So therefore, it's left up open to the Rishonim, to the medieval commentators, the Gemara, to be able to identify more specifically. Yeah?
If you go back to the Gemara itself, where the incident with Bibi Bar Abaye, he wanted to presumably read the Zos HaBracha before Yom Kippur, which is...
So it depends on the year, doesn't it?
What?
It depends on the year, doesn't it?
Well, we don't know what their calendar was.
Okay,
a little bit shaky,
but it does depend on the year, because...
Calendar was our calendar.
Is at Yom Kippur, what is the next parsha? It depends.
We know by definition, right? By the way, Zos HaBracha is never read on a Shabbos.
Correct.
So Zos HaBracha doesn't have a week. So it sounds like from the... then it's acceptable to read it before Yom Kippur, because otherwise they should have answered. Why they give him this limud?
Wait a second. There was an assumption made over there that's not correct. Let's say it's a year. Let's clarify for a second. When we have a year like we had this year, Yom Kippur was on Shabbos. Therefore, Shabbos Shiva was Hazinu. Therefore, the next parsha was Vizos HaBracha. And therefore, what were you learning on Monday and Thursday in Aseret Shemeshuvah was? This is HaBracha, meaning Im HaTzibur may have started already.
No, but you're also learning
okay.
HaShlem. Let's go study the facts.
Okay.
There were two cases. One was HaShlem and one was to be Makdim. So if he was reading Zos HaBracha in a week which was Hazinu, then that's not a case of HaShlem. With Ora, the case of HaShlem is if that's the parsha for that time. Because otherwise, there
no. Yes or no? There's a few details out there which we are not addressing.
That it could have been that week's parsha. He wanted the next Rizachos before Yom Kippur.
Correct.
So he finished up.
Correct.
So
but if it's not the right time, they shouldn't have answered him. If I want to blow shofar on July 4th, you don't give me a limud that it's a mitzvah to have a barbecue on
absolutely.
July 4th. So the horror that they gave him this answer, I would think there's a deal that, and by the way, what was this? This is Abaye's son here. What was he thinking? If there's a mitzvah, you do it in the right time. So it seems pretty clear from the Gemara that whatever the calendar is, that doing it before Yom Kippur is the right time, even though Zos HaBrachos doesn't have a Shabbos.
Okay, I agree with your diuk, and there happens to be one or two other factors which may diffuse it in just a second, yes. But point well taken at this point. Yes?
There's no indication that you have to be mashlim in Parsha on Shabbos. It just says
good. You should be good. We don't have an indication when. You're right. It's just imat zibur. So you see, that's why it's so.
When does the zibur start?
So when does the zibur start? When do we start reading the parsha? Is great. Excellent. So on that note, the Tosfos says very clearly: Yashlim parshiyos imat zibur nira de kol hashavua mikevah de maskinin likros parsha dahainu mimincha's Shabbos ve'elach ad Shabbos haba'a nikra imat zibur. Says Tosfos. Therefore, the defining time frame is starting at the moment you start the next week. We started Lech Lecha yesterday afternoon, and therefore you can start learning Parashas Lech Lecha from that point onwards. Va'af al gad le'inyan gitzin lo nikra kami Shabbos ela mirvi va'elach. Even though it's not considered before Shabbos from Wednesday onwards, and therefore you think you can only do it from Wednesday onwards, which would severely curtail our time. Right, zvan hashalom yesh b'midrash gimel dvar. So even though, despite that fact, good. And he says, but midrash. In the midrash, Gimel Dvarim Tzivo Rabbeinu HaKadosh Levonov. Rabbeinu HaKadosh said three things on his deathbed to his children. Who's Rabbeinu HaKadosh? Rabbeinu HaKadosh is Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, the redactor of the Mishnah. Here are the three things he said on his deathbed to his children. B'shash Niftar Shaloi Toichlu Lechem B'Shabbos Ad Shetigmaru Kol HaParsha. One thing he said is that you shouldn't eat bread on Shabbos until you finish the entire Parsha. Could be a long Shabbos, depending on... depending on what the parsha is. Mashma dekodem achilat tzorich lashlimo. It seems that one should finish it before eating on Shabbos. Umiu im hishlimo lo achar achila shapir dami. But if a person was not able to, and one had the meal on Shabbos, of course one can do it afterwards. Mikol mitzvah mina muvchar kodem achila. One should do it beforehand. So what Tosfos has done is what?
Finish before Friday night
Suda. No. So interestingly enough, I was wondering about that, Doctor. So I was wondering about that. It sounds like the meal on Shabbos. And I would have thought that would have been the Friday night, but it seems that the common understanding of this means the Suda on Shabbos morning, which gives us a little bit of slack, especially in the winter ones. But what Tosfos has effectively done for us is define the time frame starting. When you read it, end of time frame is before you eat the next Shabbos. What happens if you don't make it? Tosfos is not addressed. What happens if you don't make it after Shabbos? So on that note, the tour, there's two ways to go with this. The tour says, Mizon emurcho shiashli moisa koidem shiyoichal b'shabbos, v'im loy hishlim oisa, if a person was not able to finish it, koidem achila, yashlim achar achila koidem amincha. You should finish it before mincha. Why before mincha? Because the next week's starting. Right, you're already in the next time frame. Aval mishon ve'elach, kema shemaschinen acheres, avar zmano shel zois. Says the tour, if you don't get it, you're done, finished, gone. That's the end of the time frame. You lost. However, thank God we have a little bit of space. And the Mordechai says the Mordechai was a Ashkenazi posek. And what's unique about him is found at the back of every Gemara. And the Mordechai does is he coalesces. He brings together very unknown Rishonim. Unknown Ashkenazi poskim, and you'll hear about these names you'll never find elsewhere, that he quotes practices that were kept in Germany around the time. And he quotes the following: Vakosava Maharam. Maharam being, who's the Maharam? The Maharam in Rutenberg, who is one of his teachers. The Maharam in Rutenberg was a tremendous leader of the time. In fact, unfortunately, he was imprisoned and died in prison under ransom at his time. He was a tremendous leader of the German community at the time. Mi shelo chazar haseder shnai mikravecho targum yochol achzor ad yom revi'i. He now expands it till Wednesday. Why do you think Wednesday? Right. So Havdalah continues to Wednesday. Demidi dahava a Havdalah. Because Havdalah continues to that point. Then he quotes a dissenting opinion. But interestingly enough, so the Mordechai quotes the Maharam, who's a Bar Hachi, he has the shoulders to say such a thing, that means to say that a person is able to extend it all the way to Wednesday. What happens if? What happens if we don't make it by Wednesday? So there is one last... By the way, this is, you know, present company included. This is a very, very difficult thing. So the having this leeway is very important. The last point brought by Gaius Maimonides, who has sporadic notes on the Rambam, points out the following. Also, Rishon, Kosar Rabbeinu Simcha, Afal Pi Sheikar Mitzvah Shel Kol Parsha B'Chol Shabbos Im Atzibur. Even though the mitzvah is every week with the tzibur, Im Loi Also Kain Yashlim Kulam B'Shmini Atzeres. A person should finish them on Shmini Atzeres. Sheboy Gomrim Hatzibur. On that day, the community themselves finish the Torah. Yom Echad. As long as you do not precede one week or another. Where does he know this from? He learns this from Rabbi Barabaya. He wanted to do it all on Erev Yom Kippur. But he was opposed to Kadesh Lo Yivatel Misudos Erev Yom Kippurim because he didn't want to interrupt his eating, of the midst of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. Now, what does Rabbeinu Chanan understand? Rabbeinu Chanan being one of the Go'onim on the Gemara, Shegores Lahani Parshios Dekalo. What was Rabbi Rabbi Barabaya doing at that point in time? He was finishing up all the Parshios of Kala. What does that mean? Dalad Parshios Shel Elul. The four sections of Elul, because there are four Parshios, there are 4 weeks of Elul. He would do those four. Why? Sheloi Hoyoloi Panai Lahashlimam Mibnei Tirdas Kala. Pirush Joshas Bahala Hilchas Moed. He spent a long time preparing his Joshas for the Moed, for all the festivals. By the way, you should know, it's a very difficult time for Rabbonim around around Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. So he had spent a lot of time doing the preparation, and because of that, it would take up the time he would have otherwise given to Shnai Mikra. And therefore, on Erev Yom Kippur, that's why he wanted to do this. But what do we see from over here is that the end point is when the Torah ends, and therefore on Shmini Atzeres, when one has the opportunity of coming back. So full circle. By the way, just one has to think, does this make it easier or not easier? If only one had up to the end of Shabbos, right, it's the deadline, which is a red line, and that's it. But now that we have these, you know, these safety nets, you know, it becomes easier to rationalize the catch-up, and it becomes a little more difficult to deal with. So it goes in both directions. Just to conclude with just one interesting point is, do you do this in one chunk, or do you do this in pieces? How do you break it up? So there are different opinions in Halacha. The Shari Tshuva quotes the Arizal. I'm not going to read this inside, but the Arizal, who, by the way, did not write his own works. Arizal spent a lot of time in Egypt, moved to Tzfat at the end of his life, and most of his recorded writings are written by his student, Rav Chaim Vital, who recorded a lot of the teachings of the Arizal, and Kabbalistically said a person should do it on Friday morning. Now, certainly, not everybody has that. In fact, most people don't have that ability. He said a person should do it on Friday mornings. However, the Vilna Gaon is quoted as having done it because there are 7 days in a week and there are 7 aliyos in a parsha. The Vilna Gaon would sit down on a Sunday morning to do Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, and that way it sets out. I think the general rule is do what you can. That's the general rule. Is there's enough free space in halacha that there are different practices or different ways. Whenever a person has time, that's the time. So there are different ways of doing it, but it is interesting to see just how earlier sources did express it differently. What I'd like to do, just to conclude over here, what we did today is the background, the Marichin Yom Shnosov, the significance of Ataras Adivon, and today also the time frame and how to break it up. Next week I'd like to cover, to complete the cycle, is the significance of Targum. Is it dependent on understanding or not? Also, finally, the breakup of Pasuk by Pasuk or Targum as a whole. And finally, the reasonings behind this, so we can put all these details in context. Because there's different tracks to understanding what this means, and the details line up very differently based on this. And that will be the end of this session. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming today.